In observance of the year of faith declared by our former Holy Father, Pope Benedict XVI, we have been looking at a number of the principal documents of the Second Vatican Council, the 50th anniversary of which occasions this celebration of the year of faith. Since the first of the year, we looked at the dogmatic constitution on the Church called Lumen Gentium. Today I'd like to start our discussion of another pastoral constitution of the Council on the Church in the modern world, called in Latin Gaudium et Spes. The other constitution that we looked at in January and March was a dogmatic constitution, speaking about what the Church is in herself, her essential nature. Many of the other documents of the Council talk about the Church and the renewal of the interior life of the Church. This pastoral constitution that we begin to look at today was published at the very end of the Second Vatican Council, and it is not an in-house document about the life of the Church. Instead, it's a document addressed to the whole world. During the Council, the Church reflected on her own nature and what needed to be renewed and purified within her. Now, at the end of that four-year period, she is ready to address the world with the message that she has been entrusted for it to hear. Very much in the spirit of the first reading today, when those who have gone out to proclaim the gospel to the Jewish people turn to the Gentiles and make the announcement to all the nations of the world. So that's the purpose of this document. Its title in Latin is Gaudium et Spes. Like all Roman documents, those are the first words in the text. Gaudium et Spes means joy and hope. And the first couple of sentences of the document are these. I'm not going to read too much directly from the text, but I will read these first two sentences. And actually, while I read them, I'd like you to consider of whom these sentences remind you. When I reread them again to get ready for these talks, I thought, boy, that sounds just like fill in the blank. Small clue, it's not Jesus, but it's someone who works for him. So the Constitution begins. The joys and hopes, the griefs and the anxieties of the men of this age, especially those who are poor or in any way afflicted. These are the joys and hopes, the griefs and the anxieties of the followers of Christ. Indeed, nothing genuinely human fails to raise an echo in their hearts, in the hearts of believers. Who does that sound like? To me, I was reminded so much of our new Holy Father, Pope Francis. In feeling very deeply the joys, the sorrows, the hopes, the anxieties of the sheep of the flock. Especially, you know, he was a bishop and an archbishop in South America, where the social problems are very serious and very visible. So that's the spirit of the document Gaudium et Spes. I think it's very providential that in Pope Benedict XVI, we had a great analyst of the Second Vatican Council, a great interpreter of the Council. Now, in Pope Francis, I think God has given us a Holy Father who is in some way a personification of the spirit of this document. So Gaudium et Spes doesn't talk just about theological issues or church matters, but discusses things that are of interest to all people. And as those opening words suggest, the spirit of the document is one of solidarity with people. sharing their joys and their sorrows and their troubles, especially. We might be reminded of the words of Jesus in the gospel. God did not send his Son into the world to condemn the world, but that the world might be saved through him. There is a sense that the church has been trusted with a message that the world needs to hear and is being announced to the world out of concern that the world be saved. And this is, of course, a great spirit and great orientation to have. In centuries gone by, until the late 18th century, the church and the faith had shaped the life of Europe, had created Europe, really. But from the time of the French Revolution, when there was a really militant revolt that was frankly atheistic against the ancient faith, the church had very much felt an outsider, at least in Europe. We hadn't had that sense so much here in the United States, I don't think. But there was a sense that the church had been pushed to the margins, and there was an antagonism between the church and the culture, the church and the world. Gaudium et Spes returns to this attitude that the church cares about those who are outside her and has a message for them. So the introduction of Gaudium et Spes is largely devoted to making the case that the world stands in need of this message. The world needs to be saved. And that point is made not by a theological argument to, you know, talk about the fall of Adam and Eve or talk about death and judgment. Gaudium et Spes begins by citing our common human experience, that modern people have the sense that something is wrong, something is broken. Something needs to be fixed. But the modern person also has the sense that there has been progress and great progress in many ways. It's a kind of a mixed condition in which we find ourselves. And that's what Gaudium et Spes says. That's the diagnosis that it gives in its introduction. The text offers a few concrete examples of conflicts that people were really feeling and experiencing in the mid-60s, and those things have not gone away in the 50 years since. First, an abundance of wealth for some, a tremendous prosperity and comfort, in the midst of poverty and illiteracy for many, that troubles the conscience. Also, Gaudium et Spes says, modern people exalt freedom, believe in it, love it, see it as central to their lives, but experience new forms of social and psychological slavery, even as they want freedom more than anything else. And finally, that we have, and we had in the 60s, especially in those days, some of you remember them, there was a great enthusiasm about the United Nations and, you know, peace after World War II and World War I and all those troubles. We had a great ideal of human unity, but in the face of that ideal, what we really experienced and read about in the papers was hostility between rival ideological camps. Of course, in those days, it was the East versus the West across the Iron Curtain and the Cold War. Along with the mention of those practical conflicts that people felt and read about every day, Gaudium et Spes also mentioned some more subtle tensions, dislocations under the surface that led to the modern person kind of feeling lost. The first was that scientific methodology was extremely successful. It was carrying the day. Everyone appreciated and acknowledged its usefulness, and it produced a technology that improved the comfort and convenience of our lives. But that was accompanied by a fragmentation of knowledge and a loss of wisdom. We were good at doing technical things, but we thought less and less about why we were doing them and paid less and less attention to the moral goods. We see that, I think, in spades today. You know, a university education was traditionally meant to produce an educated person who understood the world and had a command of the great intellectual and moral traditions of the West, especially, was a sort of Renaissance person. That has completely collapsed. Now, if you go to the universities to study a technical subject, the hard sciences, you come out with an extremely good command of that subject matter, but without any familiarity whatsoever with the cultural tradition of Christendom. If you go to the universities to study the liberal arts, what you really get is political propaganda motivated by the will to power, and that's why they don't get many students anymore. So that situation where there's the extreme technical progress but the loss of wisdom, the council talked about that. Before the word was invented, Gaudium et Spes was talking about globalization. That in some ways it's very good that we're more interconnected with others in the world. We see humanity as one. But the document said there's a downside to that, that traditional communities, organic communities, smaller communities, lose their identity. They used to have a way of life, a worldview, a moral system that gave their lives coherence. Now they're just part of the great mass culture of the world. Also, industrialization and urbanization, people moving to the cities. Industrialization increases our wealth, the wealth of the society, very strongly, very sharply, but at a price. In our country, we experienced this 100 years ago and more, people moving off the farms and into the cities. It's happening, it has happened at breakneck speed in China in the last generation or so. Great industrial cities being built, producing all the things that we can buy very cheaply in this country. But those industrial cities attract young people from the country who leave family, who leave culture, who leave ties to the things that make life human, and live sort of as worker bees in these great cities, living sometimes, in big dormitories and making money, but not having a life that's very human. So Gaudium et Spes says, well, there is a progress here in industrialization, but not without a price that is paid by the human person. And finally, the alienation of the young because of this dislocation from tradition and culture. The young question everything that is received and authority and are eager for influence themselves. So that's the problem that Gaudium et Spes lays out. Not an unambiguously black picture. Many positive elements of progress, but with a shadow side. The response of the church to this situation is given in the body of the Constitution, which is divided into two big parts. The first part talks about the principles that a Christian uses to think about contemporary problems in our situation. Part two, five chapters, is about special questions, particular issues. There's one on marriage and family, one on culture, one on economic and social life, one on the political community, and one on the international community and world peace. The church is not necessarily an expert in all those things. The church is not an expert in economics. The church is not an expert in arms control treaties. But the church is, as Pope Paul VI said, an expert in humanity. The gift of the church is to understand the human person, the dignity of the human person, our social nature, our capacity to know and love God, and our fulfillment in love. The church speaks about particular topics out of that vision of who the human person is. Now, that's one of the great themes treated in part one of the Body of Government Spes. Who is the human person? What is the human person? That's an interesting starting point, of course. It's not the way you conventionally do theology. Theology usually is deductive. It starts with God. It even starts with the Father, who is the absolute origin. The Father begets the Son, from them proceed the Holy Spirit. So in theology, normally, you talk about God, and then creation, and then the church, and then what happens in the church, and then our destiny, human destiny. That's not the method of Gaudium et Spes. It is the method of the Creed, the method of the Catechism, even the method of Lumen Gentium. But Gaudium et Spes starts not with God and deduction from that, but with human experience and the human person. This is not a betrayal of our theological tradition, evidence that we are accepting some sort of atheistic humanism. It reflects the fact that Gaudium et Spes is not a conventional theological document for the sake of clarifying questions of the faith for believers. Rather, it's a document addressed to the whole world, to all people of goodwill. And so the starting point is human experience. Gaudium et Spes appeals to human experience and says the church affirms the best convictions that the modern person has and aspirations that modern people have, but has a deeper understanding of the human person and some of the ambiguity in the human heart. And that is what gives us something that is evidently valuable to say to the world and a reflection of our faith that leads us to know the Lord himself. So the starting point of Gaudium et Spes is the human person. And that became a very influential move in Catholic social thought, very much taken up by Pope John Paul II, that in thinking about the matters in this world and social questions, the human person is always the beginning and the standard and the end of everything that's done in the social realm. Why is that so important? Well, it was very, very important to Pope John Paul II because he had lived his whole life practically under first the Nazis and then the communists. In those ideologies, what was important was the cause, the big idea, the purity of race and fatherland, or the classless society. And everything had to serve that end. It didn't matter how many millions of people you had to kill in the service of that idea. That's what ideology is. That the idea must be served no matter how it looks on the ground, no matter what the consequences are for concrete living human persons. So the Catholic approach to social thought is the antidote to that, saying the human person must always be the starting point. Whatever is done in the social realm must be true to who the human person really is, a complete vision of the human person, and also the human person must be served by the social reality. So the human person is the starting point, and Gaudium et Spes in this first section really says three important things about the human person. As I say, reaffirming what the world at its best values as well. First, human dignity. Second, freedom. And third, our social nature. The dignity of the human person, the importance of the human race, is said in Gaudium et Spes to be a commonly held conviction, maybe somewhat less so now than in 1965. Gaudium et Spes says that the church entirely affirms this belief in the dignity of the human person and holds that as central and undeniable because we are created in the image of God. That's why we must protect human dignity and never violate it. Gaudium et Spes says this is in no way hostile to humanity. It does not diminish humanity to say that we are created in the image of a God who is greater than we are. In fact, it elevates the human person to have that perspective. But, Gaudium et Spes says, our faith also teaches us that the human person who has such great dignity is also a fallen creature. And Gaudium et Spes does not make that point by appealing to the book of Genesis. It makes that point by appealing to our experience, that we see in ourselves and in humanity a great mixture of nobility and heroism and altruism and generosity, along with the capacity and the actual perpetrating of very great evil. We have had that on display here in our country just in the last week. You know, those savage bombing at the Boston Marathon, perpetrated by human beings. But at the moment those bombs went off, many citizens ran toward the explosion rather than away in order to help others. So the human condition is a very mysterious thing. There's a great nobility, but there is also a fallenness. The church says the faith teaches us to revere and to protect the dignity of the human person. It also gives us an understanding of why it is such a mixed situation in which we find ourselves. Then freedom. The modern world has a great devotion to freedom. It's one of our highest American ideals. It's what we see our country as being all about. Gaudium et Spes says, well, yes, the church absolutely believes in freedom. We are created as free persons. We have a free will. That's one of the things that makes us like God. We can only do serious wrong when we do it freely. The free will is very important. But Gaudium et Spes says, the modern world often misunderstands what freedom is, seeing it only as the ability to do what we like. The point of Gaudium et Spes is freedom has to be related to truth. If we exercise our freedom only as license to do whatever we like, in fact, that leads us to slavery of one kind or another. One of the most evident examples of that is addictions. We are doing what we want at some level, but it does not make us more free. It makes us slaves to something that is harmful to us. So Gaudium et Spes says, real freedom has to be related to the truth. And we know that, the document says, from our experience of conscience, that even someone who does not acknowledge the gospel knows that he or she is sometimes doing wrong in exercising freedom, that somehow it is disordered. And finally, having a social nature, everyone makes that observation about the human person, that we are social animals. But that interpersonal aspect of our nature is often not well served by contemporary culture and mass society, where we're kind of anonymous, just little drops of water in a sea of humanity. The church says that we were first taught about our social nature in the creation of a partner and helpmate for Adam. And one of the things that taught us is that our social nature is not just one of use and convenience, but it is we are meant to enter into real communion with others, first in that fundamental relationship of marriage. So the church says we entirely agree that we are not created to be isolated, solitary individuals, and we understand better than the world does the quality of that relationship we are meant to have with others. It is meant to be a communion. There is meant to be a generous love at the heart of that. And we are created not only for communion with others, but with God himself. We will not be satisfied in our human existence until we have communion with him. An insight expressed so powerfully by St. Augustine long time ago, cited in paragraph 21 of Gaudium et Spes: "Thou hast made us for thyself, O Lord, and our hearts are restless until they rest in thee." So that's what Gaudium et Spes is about. It's the message of the church addressed to the world, beginning with the way people in our contemporary society experience human life, its progress, but also its shadows. And the effort to speak to that culture the truth of the gospel about who the human person is. So next week we'll talk a little bit more about the relationship between the church and the world, and then maybe a couple of Sundays in June finish up looking at Gaudium et Spes.